Chris White, welcome, dude. It's good to see you. Hey. Well, actually, I know exactly the last time I saw you, but you didn't see me. I saw you at Seagraph in Los Angeles. Was it two summers ago now? And you gave a big talk with a bunch of people from Netflix, Umbrella? I think.
Yeah. That was from Umbrella Academy.
Yeah.
That was good. That was a fun talk. It was funny.
You cracked some good one-liners.
That's good. Because you never know how those things are going to play when you're writing them up, you know, doing a keynote.
Yeah, no, it was a good one.
It was a good panel, though. That was fun. That's 2 years ago. Yeah.
So now, let's see. You and I worked together at ILM back in, like, the mid-90s.
Yeah.
You were on Twister.
And then Star Wars.
Yeah, a little bit of episode one.
Yeah.
Did you do Speed 2? Were you on that whole train for a while?
No, I was doing, I think I was doing some Jurassic Park 2 and Mars.
Oh, right.
And then I got onto the Star Wars episodes, and I think I did those.
You got sucked into the vortex.
Yeah. So I think that was, I think we might have just crossed over on that. Maybe just that show. And then later at Weta.
Yeah. Where you still are. It's interesting. Like, you're in New Zealand where is it almost fall? Is that right?
Yeah, almost. I mean, it's still kind of summer here, but it is getting chilly.
Yeah.
So I've been in New Zealand for close to 18 years now.
Wow. That's awesome. So are you, like, officially now a citizen of New Zealand?
Oh, yeah,
that's so cool.
Yeah, I have been for a while, actually.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So now, I know this because we've talked about it a couple of times, but this might be really interesting to my students. Where are you from originally?
Yeah. So originally, grew up in Dale City, Virginia. So Prince William County, you know, just maybe right on 95. Went to high school there. And pretty much, grew up in the same house and lived my whole life there before going off to college to Syracuse. But still have a lot of family and friends still in Virginia. And I try and make it back every year, except for this year. This is the first year in a long time I haven't been back.
Yeah. It's probably hard to, when you're, everything's so nice in New Zealand with the COVID situation, you don't really want to go and then have to come and sit for 2 weeks in quarantine.
Yeah, exactly.
So growing up in Virginia now, did you, what did your folks do?
So my mom was a registered nurse, and she did anesthesiology, and then when we were younger, she was a school nurse at Garfield High School. So she was there all through our high school, which was great. And my dad was a systems analyst and did programming and worked for different government agencies in the Virginia area, which a lot of people did around the place that I grew up, you know.
Yeah. But with that programming background too, like, for him, probably, like, that's got to be pretty early on for doing a lot of that kind of work, right?
Yeah. He would talk about punch cards and dropping punch cards and things like that. And that's what got us into computers early, because he was, showing us things. And then he also taught at Northern Virginia Community College.
Oh, cool.
He would teach courses there. So there's times that we would, like, sit in the back of courses that he was teaching or, like, other professors teaching. So we learned coding pretty young because of that.
Did you say we? Did you have, like, brothers and sisters?
Oh yeah. I have two brothers and a sister. And the middle brother, I'm the youngest, was very close in age. So we would, got into all that at the same time. You know, Commodore 64s and Amigas and all of that. You know,
that's so cool. So you must have had computers in the house too, then, right?
Yeah, we did at a very young age. And then there was even some. Like Apples and different computers that my dad was able to get and things like that, early, almost not prototypes, but early computers that he would allow us to work on, Osborne's and stuff.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Do you know what, like, with your dad, like, why was that? Like, how did he get into that? Do you know, like, how he got into doing, like, working it with computers like that early?
Yeah. I mean, he studied He grew up in Mississippi and lived in Chicago, but he studied computer and math. And then he went, and then he ended up coming to Virginia. But I think at that time, those government jobs, that was something that was more accessible. You know, it was limited when the time when he was growing up, what different fields he could get into, even though he had those university degrees. And then, yeah, then got into that and then met my mom, and stayed with it for 30 or so years. But he
Wow.
also did a lot of woodworking on the side. So that was like he had this artistic and technical side.
Really? So, and the woodworking stuff, like, did he do like building furniture or do you like?
Yeah, he built like furniture and podiums and different things for our church.
Oh,
I
cool.
wrote an article that was in Variety couple weeks ago, and I kind of go through that whole history of his side of art and computer science and how it got me into visual effects.
Did you ever do any like when growing up with him doing that kind of woodworking stuff? Were you into that too? Did you do a lot of like physical building of things?
I did a little bit, like you do, you know, wood class in school, and they make you make those little bookends and stuff
Yeah.
with the paper, the
Wood
Post-it on the
shop.
top. So yeah, the wood shop stuff. I did a little bit of that, but I think part of what the neighborhood we grew up in was great. It was very diverse. It was one of those kind of areas that was built as the government was expanding and they were, you know, branching out farther from DC. So we had it was like one of those times you grew up where there'd be 20 kids would come out at night to play flashlight tag, and we'd all run around together. But part of it was that a lot of being in the woods or digging through your family's, you know, your dad's stuff and just building go-karts and building things. You know, there's a lot of that kind of creativity to keep yourself busy during summers in Virginia, you know.
Yeah,
So,
free range kids, free range
yeah.
play.
Exactly. And it was completely that. And because, like I said, we were all the same age. You know, it was just, we just had a pack of kids that were just always making things and doing stuff. So
Were
it was a
you
good
into movies as a kid?
I was into like the classic, you know, 70s, 80s movies, you know, all the Star Wars
So you got caught up in the pop culture zeitgeist like all of us
yeah.
did.
Yeah, I did. And then it wasn't until I went off to Syracuse that we started to study a little bit more about film, but I wouldn't say I would be as knowledgeable as it of it as like you would or anything. We didn't go that deep into it,
Yeah.
but I was always into it. Yeah.
So you grew up there, and then what was the draw for Syracuse? Was there a particular program that you were really interested in?
Well, the interesting thing was I was just thinking I was going to go straight programming. It's what a lot of, you know, programming or engineering. I kind of saw my whole future. Maybe I'd get a local government job and, you know, it's kind of a similar thing. But then George Washington University was having a summer program where we could leave high school and we could go and take these kind of drafting engineering classes. And someone showed some rigid body dynamics, you know, of computer graphics. And I was kind of amazed by that. And then I started researching it. And then, like, I was just, it was one of those things where you kind of see it and you're like, oh, that's what I want to do. You
Sure.
know, this is something I don't understand how you could do that on a computer.
Yeah.
And then the Amigas started coming out and started seeing all this ray tracing. And so I completely shifted my degree, you know, completely shifted and started looking at the computer art program at Syracuse. So that's kind of what spurred it on.
That's cool. Did you have like in, was there at your high school, were there any like computer classes that you
There
took
were
too?
programming classes, but no one had really mixed it with art like Syracuse at that
Right.
time. I think it was like them and RISD and a couple, not like today where there's so many programs. They were one of
Yeah.
the few, Ohio State, you know, that had computer art programs. And when I went up there and saw the campus, it just, you know, and just saw everything, it felt like that's where I needed to be.
So at Syracuse now you're in the program. And
Yeah.
what's the degree in that you get?
It was visual and performing arts, so it was computer art. So it was a mix of coding classes, and but you were under the School of Art,
So it's an,
and
was it like a BFA?
it was a BFA. Yeah, and it was And I was kind of into, like, started to look at, like, particle systems were becoming interesting. And then one day, if I remember correctly, I think it was Carl Friedrich, because someone from ILM came and gave a talk. And then we were all of a sudden like, ooh, like I had never even imagined kind of doing that work. Like I thought I would maybe do weather graphics or like my life goal was to do those little clouds that they come, next to each of the little dates and the temperature and stuff. And I think it was Carl Friedrich came by and then he gave a talk. And then we all started thinking about it. And then he mentioned the ILM internship. And so a bunch of us applied, and I knew several people. Each year, I got really close. Like, it told me you were in the top two or the top three, but I never got it. And yeah, it was just, yeah, it was like each year. And basically, after I finished Syracuse, I went back to Virginia for a little bit because I wasn't sure what I was going to do. And then it was hard to get a job at that time because the even to work as a free, you could even work on the machines for free because a Softimage license was so expensive. Like people, like you have a great portfolio, but the computer time is even more expensive than you working for free.
What year did you graduate?
That was 93, I think.
Yeah, so we're the same age. We're probably exactly the same age.
Exactly. So then I went to graduate school at a University of Illinois in Chicago and was studying. They were doing amazing virtual reality stuff, virtual reality caves. I was still doing particle systems, but I wanted to keep trying for the ILM internship because it's one of those things. It was like I said, it was like the fourth, and then it was on my fourth time that I applied. My portfolio was full of vortexes and particles and how to create artist tools to do particle systems, and it was ideal for. My because Twister had come in at that time and I applied and then I got the internship, but it was one of those things that was kind of like a life lesson because I was because all those years I was upset that I never got the internship, but the year I did get it, everything I had was ideal for it. Like
Yeah,
if I
totally
got
got in sync right there for
it
sure.
got in sync. So it's one of those things where you think at the time, oh, why doesn't this work out? Or you're upset about something. And then you find out later in life that it was actually perfect. Had I
Yeah,
got it.
totally fortuitous, like works
Yeah.
out perfectly.
It works out perfectly. Exactly. And that's where I
That's
got to the ILM internship.
so wait, so at it's in Chicago, you said?
In
In
Chicago, University of
Chicago?
Illinois, Chicago. Yeah.
So is that an MS or an MFA?
That was an MFA. So it was a similar, it was at the Electronic Visualization Lab. And they were doing really advanced work and they still do. And they do the same thing. They mix the art students with the computer science MS and PhD
That's
students
so
in the same
smart. That's
class.
such a smart way to structure a program. Like the bang for the buck that you can get in doing it that way, it just seems so obvious.
Yeah,
But
exactly.
not every school does it that way.
Yeah, it was great because you're working with these amazing, computer science students. So we're programming and we're doing art and they're doing the same thing. They're going back and forth. And like I said, it was a very, if you look at the lab, a very historical lab. I think they even did like early graphics for the original Star Wars, like that flying through the Death Star, those kind of graphics. So that was, and it was just a place where we got to learn so much.
For you as like in the BFA and in the MFA, like having that sort of programming background, like with computers growing up and your dad kind of being engaged with a lot of that kind of stuff, did that set you apart from some of your student peers? Like, did that give you a little extra cowbell kind of?
I mean, I think having that background definitely helps a lot, having that mix because as an artist, you're not completely relying on somebody else's tools. You can make it yourself if you need something, and in that time that was pretty important. But it was the nice thing about it was that everybody else that I was with was like that as well because they got into the same programs for the same reasons. So that was great. And I had been doing particle systems for maybe about from undergrad to graduate, and that was kind of my focus. And the funny thing about it was that when I was there in school, I started to think maybe I've done the limit of what I could do with particles. I think I've figured out all that can be done. And then I get to ILM and I was like, man, I hadn't scratched the surface, you know, even after the first day.
So the internship, was it during like the regular school year, or was it a summer internship?
It was a summer internship. And like I said, it was a great program. Like we all came in on that, that first day. And, I had friends that had done it before, and they always talked about how great it was. They came back with those, I forgot what they called them. I don't know if they were, they had shirts that had all the films that were done each year.
I can't remember what they called those either. It was like the Academy shirt or
something. It was like all the films done this year. And they'd come back and they would talk about how great they were, and they were show those shirts, and I was like, man, I'd love to get one of those shirts. So I went into the internship. The first day they threw us one of those shirts so that we could have one of those. So I was stoked.
And then it was worth it.
I'm all done now. But it was, the internship was good. And it was Henry Labonte was my supervisor, so he, you know, he brought me in, and it wasn't, you know, I wasn't making coffee or blacking out videotapes or anything like that. It was like immediately, you know, we're gonna have you doing stuff. You know, we got this film Twister, and so we started off, and I was at the early part of the internship. I was staying with a friend in Daly City, so I had
like a long drive.
Well, it was a bus commute because I didn't have that much cash. So I was taking all the buses through San Francisco into Marin up to San Rafael. So I would be on the bus sometimes 3 hours each way with all the connections. And Henry and Habib Zargarpur also was, you know, doing that. Well, they were like, well, if you're on the bus all this time, you can read this book and Dynamation and Soft Image, take advantage of that time. So I was like drilling through these books, you know, through the whole internship.
That's awesome. So like autodidactic, like really just like taking it on, and you're just like, all right, well, I'm sitting here. Might as well keep going.
Might as well do this. Yeah. And then they're like, okay, start coding this. We need interfaces for this Twister clip effect. So I was, you know, within a couple of weeks, right in there, and they were giving me, you know.
So you're helping develop like back end, like tools that are going to be deployed on the project.
Yeah. Wow, I was, that's great. Because Henry and Habib were building all the code and the techniques, and Mike Ludlam, and I was doing the interface, because that fit in with what I was doing in graduate school. Like, how do you give an interface for all the artists who need to move these without them digging into Dynamation code? So I was building all the sliders and the utilities and the visualization within Dynamation. And it ended up being like 10,000 lines. It was a pretty fair amount of code, and we ran it through the whole show. I must have been like 20, 23 or something.
Yeah.
Intern wages, you know, just.
Right,
just
sure. Yeah, up. Like minimum wage, I think, is what all interns got, like, at the time. Yeah. It's like definitely like not living high on the hog there.
Yeah, but well worth it, you know, because it was, like I said, and Kim Bromley was producing it, and Stefan Fangmeier, and they just gave me tons of work to do. So I was right into the show.
That's really cool. And that was like such a at that time too, like, I mean, it was a great crew. Like, I mean, I think that group of people they like to have fun at work, but that work on that show too, all the stuff for doing all the tornadoes, like, I mean, people now, you look at it and you're just like, well, yeah, you just, you know, make an emitter and put some fields in there and do whatever. Yeah. Like, and it is kind of more of almost like a turnkey solution now, but at the time nothing like that had really been done at all.
Yeah, not at all. It was that was cool about it. It was really groundbreaking, and like I said, we were writing all that code. It wasn't fluids and everything. It was just handwritten.
Are you there like through just for the summer months, like while you're in between semesters at school, or what happens like
what happened at the end was, it was like I was like, it was the show was still beginning, and I was like, man, I'm learning so much here, and I really wanted to stay on. You know, I already had my bachelor's, so that made it easier. And I said, well, I want to stay through the show, you know, and see it through. And I did go back and finish my master's. It took a little bit of time, but but I wanted to see this show through. And like you said, it was one of those shows where the crew, you know, the crew is amazing. I think we even had like reunion picnics at like Stinson Beach or somewhere, you know, like here. Well, everybody belongs so well.
I would almost make the case that, like, I mean, I don't know if you would concur with this, but I would almost make the case that, like, given the way you're describing it, like, what you were doing in the internship, and if you choose then to, like, postpone the MFA and continue on to the end of the show, like, I would almost argue, like, you're doing a level of work at a high pace with a really huge sort of output that like, it's really almost the equivalent of a PhD, you know, like you're really doing a level of work and development that probably goes far beyond, I would think, what you would have been doing in the MFA.
Yeah, it was definitely a high level because everybody was using my code, like all the TDs were using it. So I was supporting that all day long and adding and additional stuff. So it was definitely, it was a really high level. And the one thing about it too was, and it's something I almost recommend with students that I'm working with, is that you need to be able to solve other people's problems. Like one thing you get in a trap in school is you make the same problems that you try to solve. So on Twister, you know, I'm getting different problems. Like, you know, Mike Ludlam said, I need to be able to see my debris look like this or that. So I had to go code that. And so that was the one thing that was, you know, the challenge of everything that's new. Or we got notes from Jan de Bont that the twisters need to be really long and skinny, you know, and updates to code and things like that that we had to do. So it was definitely a high level show. So it was worth staying on. And I stayed for years after that.
Yeah. So what happens like at the end of Twister? So do you go back to Chicago or do you just stay in the Bay Area?
Yeah, I didn't actually go back to Chicago until the end of ILM. While I still had my credits, it was probably like 7 years later, but I did go back and finish it. So I stayed on all the way through, you know, more shows through Star Wars and
so at the end of that summer, did they obviously then they offered you a job? Yeah.
And I think I was technically an employee on Twister as well. Like I think after the internship ended, then I was employee then through that.
Yeah, that's awesome. What was your title when you first started there after intern? Do you remember?
I think it was ATD, like an assistant technical director. I think that's when they were starting to do the ATD program.
Yeah. If I remember correctly. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. But you weren't doing like, you know, some of the lower, like the, not lower, that sounds so dismissive, but you weren't doing like you didn't have to do any of the tape IO or night render support. You were really involved in the writing of the tools, the tool development.
Yeah, I did. I didn't have to do any of that, which probably bugged some people. But
no, it's awesome. I mean, you had the skills, like that was the thing, is that you kind of had that base already.
Yeah, exactly. And then it was after that, then we started, it might've been a couple of years, but we started to get into, you know, Maya was being developed. I worked with Habib for years, you know, and working out rigid bodies and breaking up, you know, pods and, you know, pod racers. And so I spent years writing more of those tools for different shows like Mars Attacks. And so it was a lot of years of coding that continued on directly.
So you stayed on for, you said 7 years?
Yeah, I think it was a little over seven years.
Seven and change. Yeah, it's funny. Like, that's one thing that's come up a lot with people I've talked to over the course of doing these interviews is like this, we talk about the 7 year itch, you know, like at a certain point, you're kind of like, all right, this is awesome, but I kind of want to do some new stuff.
Yeah.
Was there a point for you where you were kind of like, did you kind of feel like you needed to do other things or?
Well, I think part of that was spurred on was that I just got this email that said, you know, if you don't complete your degree now, those credits will no longer, they will go away. So that was like, and that was that little extra thing. I was like, yes, I should really, cause I'd always thought of doing, you know, I was like working with students and I actually used to go during some slow summers at ILM, I would go back and teach at the School of the Art Institute in Chicago.
Oh, you would? Oh, that's awesome.
So I would go back and forth and do that. So I was always kind of keeping it with academia, and I thought someday I might want to continue that. So when the credits came up and all that. So then I went back. You know, it was about the right time to do that.
Yeah, it's either that or all that, like the X number of years that you spent the first part, it's just is gone.
It's thrown away, exactly.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So do you know, like, that kind of interest in engaging, like, as a teacher, like, where do you think that comes from for you? Like, do you have any thoughts on where that bit comes into play?
Yeah, I mean, I actually remember the moment. I think it was with when Carl came and spoke that we learned so much. I was like, man, if I ever got a job in the industry, I would go back and tell the kids what, you know, what it's really like out there. Like, I remember actually having that thought, because as great as some of the programs are, you need that additional person to come back and give you that. And it was just a very kind of open discussion. It was like a casual thing. And I was like, I would do the same thing. I would go back. And so that's why I was going back during the summers and just, you know, speaking to them about it and still trying to do it as much as I can now.
That's cool. That's like kind of the, like, I mean, not to be too corny, but that's like that paying it forward idea. Like, you know, like somebody did that for you, like you want to do that for somebody else. Like, I feel like that's a thing that, like, I feel that way now. I never imagined I'd ever teach, but I feel that way now, like teaching for so many years with a lot of young students. And then, do you remember Ty Ellingson?
Yeah.
From the art department? Like he works with me now. He came and he's now teaching at VCU. And it's been, he said the same thing. His dad actually was a college professor too. So I don't know. It's kind of funny.
No, it's a good thing, because it's you know, there's some programs with WETA that I do that. You know, I was at LSU and SCAD last year. And then I'm with another group, Inclusion Effects, which is looking at diversity. And we've been doing, just testing it out now, which is something we should probably talk about, which is like a mentor, kind of a portfolio review, where we'd get together a group of different artists and have a portfolio discussion with some of the students. And both the... both us in the industry and the students really got a lot out of it. Maybe even us more than that, because of the enthusiasm.
Yeah. You know, I got, cause I talked to Rose Degnan, and she's involved with the VES like pretty heavily in doing a lot of that same kind of stuff, outreach, like with, you know, people of color and with women, and trying to get more like diversity in the industry. And she actually reached out to me after we talked, and she said, oh, you should come to the BRIC conference, which I had never heard of. And I went, it was, I'm going to have to look it up now. I can't remember what the acronym is for BRIC, but that's its whole mission, right? It's like, it's all about like being inclusive. And it was me, Gene Bolte, Miles Perkins, and then like some other cats from other parts of the industry and other VES members. And we did a speed mentoring session at the conference, like a virtual one. And it was awesome. Like, I probably met with, I don't know, like at least a dozen different students from all over the country. And I mean, it was really, really fun. Like, some amazing, like, young kids who are super excited about, you know, potential opportunities working in the industry, which was really fun.
No, it's great. It is, like I said, it's a ton of fun for everybody, really. The kids we get a lot out of it.
For sure.
Yeah.
Hey, so you go back to get your graduate degree.
Yeah.
Right? After ILM. And how much time does it take to complete the...
It took a year to do the degree. And then I had to do a show, which... took another, like, that I was kind of, I think I stretched out over another year, because you have to do a presentation show. So I was mixing that in with other stuff, like I was doing WETA stuff, and I was doing, you know, I stretched it out that I eventually got the show completed in Chicago.
What did you do for your show? What was your piece?
It was some work. It was more like procedural. I started to get into procedural work, like, you know, programming different types of weathering and different types of like art pieces that are more procedurally generated, still on that kind of particle work. And then some of the work I was doing in Chicago, we were looking at virtual reality to represent some of African-American history in Bronzeville in the south of Chicago, because there's a lot of history down there. in those neighborhoods. And some of the research we were doing was, could we represent that in virtual reality to help with some of the historical history in teaching students. So it's kind of a mix of things. It was like VR, and then there's some imagery, and then some procedural work.
So this was I gather this completing it was much later. Like you kind of took time finishing the MFA, right?
Yeah, I mean, completing the classes took a year, but then doing the show was like maybe a year after that.
Talking about some of that procedural stuff, I can't remember if he was at ILM. Do you know Andy Lomas? Are you
The name
familiar with?
sounds familiar. Yeah.
He's I can't remember if he worked at ILM with us or if I knew him from ESC maybe. But he's a really interesting guy. He's gone on to do like a ton of fine artwork, creating these procedurally generated, like mathematically generated kind of, Mandelbulb, that's not exactly what they are, but type of forms that he then will print as well. He does big C prints of them, I think, but also of renders, but then prints them and has had a amazing like fine art career, which is really interesting. I just wondering if you guys knew each other.
Name sounds familiar.
Anyway.
Yeah, I love all that procedural work. I mean, some of my stuff was actually, it was inspired by like Ken Wesley, who was doing it way back, interesting approaches on procedural techniques. So that was kind of what drove me a little bit in Chicago. And then I did a lot, and then I did worked at Midway Games a little bit when I was there, and then I went to Weta because they were doing all of the they were doing the two towers, and I was seeing all the Gollum work. And Joe
How did
Lachapelle.
you how did that oh, was it through Joe that you connected?
Yeah, because I wrote Joe, and I wrote Ken McGall was there too.
All right.
And I wrote Joe, and then I just got like a call, like it was like a couple of days or a day or so later, from the producer, and they're like, "Hey, you want to come down?" So
Dude,
like,
get over here.
they were halfway through Return of the King, so they're like, "Yeah, you want to come down?" And I was like, "Okay, well, this sounds like adventure, so try it for 6 months and see what happened."
Yeah, and there's probably a good cadre of like ILMers, but the one that I was there for briefly for Kong, and I just remember how like one of the most amazing things, at least at that time, I'm sure this is probably still the case, it was at Weta, it felt a lot like those early ILM computer graphics days. It had that kind of upstart kind of vibe, but also there were so many people from so many different backgrounds from all over the world, and that was, I thought, one of the most exciting things about the corporate culture there. I thought it was so exciting meeting people from, I mean, from everywhere, you know.
I mean, I think you're right. I think it definitely had that same appeal, because it was really international, it still is. And also it was just that it was a similar to that ILM feel where we had Weta Workshop, which was just right over there doing all the miniatures. And so you're like coding, they're right next door. And it's the same thing when I was at, ILM. We're in D building, and so you had stages there. So it had that same feeling that it wasn't just, sitting in front of the computers, that you had all the practical work going on at the same time.
Yeah, no, you so when you come to Weta for Two Towers, Return of the King, like does that wind up being, have you been there since then? Is that
Yeah, since Return of the King. It was since, yeah. So it's
That's
funny.
the 18 years. Is that what you said?
Yeah,
18 years?
some people were looking at my resume, and they're like, "Okay, so you've had
Dang.
ILM, you've had Weta, it's not a lot of bouncing around. I guess I'm a creature of habit."
No, that's cool. But I mean, so for you, like when you got there and you kind of got into the groove with kind of the, with the people that you knew, the people that you were meeting, and kind of got into the mix, like it felt like, oh, this is a good spot for me. This is I can dial in my jam here and kind of get it going on.
Yeah, exactly. And it was a similar thing. It's like you said, it was we were doing the destruction of the Black Gates at the end of Return of King, and I was just writing my own code, putting together my own tools. It's very free form in that sense. And then that continued on to other projects. And the biggest thing I had to do was like for King Kong, Peter just wanted this procedural New York. He wanted a 3D building of all of New York. So
I remember it well.
yeah, exactly.
Lots of compositing.
Yeah, lots of compositing, lots of layers. And that was like, Joe and Eileen came to me and said, okay, we're going to do this, and we need to procedurally build it. So I was 2 years coding that. We were digging through old fire maps. I was writing a lot of code in Maya, had a small team, me and another guy, like Sambui, and a couple of teams were just coding this whole thing up to literally build all of those buildings. Like, he didn't want to be fixed to certain paintings, so he wanted to span it across the
Yeah,
whole
to
thing.
build an a proper what 1930s, is that right? Was it 1930s
Was
era in New York?
1930s. Yeah, and it had to be, the skyline had to be, he wanted it to be accurate to the, so we were literally, digging through old fire maps and stuff.
That's
And
actually a really cool thing about like that type of work too. Like there is that like procedural piece and the like back end part of like all the coding. That's probably the biggest piece. But the other thing that's so interesting about that that I always try to impress upon students too is that when you're working in high-end visual effects for films or television, the number of problems that you're tasked with solving leads you down so many interesting and incredibly rich areas of research too, where you really do get to engage almost in an academic way into like, yeah, gathering all this kind of archaeological history of like, well, what was New York like in the 30s? That's really fascinating.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. It's something I also speak to students about a lot. It's just like, if they could sit in our dailies and how many discussions we have about, oh, we're doing eyes, and what is the sclera doing, what's the cornea doing, and like you said, with all the New York stuff, what part of the city was this, and what's architecturally correct, and it was, we had a librarian that was on full time just digging through, because some of those, you didn't even have color photographs, so you're researching what the color of the lights were, the Pepsodent sign, and all of that. That you're right. The students, it's a huge part of it, is researching and learning about fields that you may have never studied in school.
Which keeps it, I think, just always fascinating and interesting. Not only are the technical challenges really interesting, but all that kind of historical research or anthropological research or physical research into like anatomy or like the hair of an ape or whatever it might be, like trying to get down to the sort of nitty-gritty of all that stuff and really have a keen understanding of like, all right, well, like I know what this should look like. I don't know if I told this story, but I remember working, I think it was either on The Mummy or maybe it was on episode one. And I remember somebody in Daily said something about like, well, we've got to change that sconce. And I remember I was like, 25, 26, like I'd never taken an architecture class. Like I'm not a decorator or anything, I don't know. And I'm thinking, what's a sconce? I had to go like look up what a sconce was. Oh, okay, like a wall fixture for a light fixture for a wall. Like, and I just thought that was so funny. Like it was one of those things where like you do learn stuff that you don't know.
Oh yeah, it was, yeah, it's yeah, it's a, yeah, like you said, it's a huge part of that research. I mean, I remember on Twister, it's the same thing. All the research of what these tornadoes can do, talking to the people that are from the Midwest. I think even like Lisa Destrova was telling us about the skies and the going green we had talked about, and these discussions and learning about what these things, really are, and what's happening there. Yeah, but the research, I was, one quick thing I was just saying, like, I had, working with students at FMX the other year, and one thing that the students' portfolios that always pop out to me are the ones that you can see that thought process behind it.
Totally.
It's like, if they can, if they have a tree in their piece, well, what kind of tree is it? Is it an oak tree? Is it a willow tree? What's the, the ones that can speak about all those details, those are the portfolios that pop out.
Yeah, and I've said that too. Like, I think that's such an important thing. Like, if you do all that work in the development of, if you're making a student short, if you do all that work in your development and do all that research, when it comes time to present that work, if you're in a room with a bunch of professionals who, you know, maybe might have an opportunity that could lead to something that you could do professionally for, you know, to make some money and pay back your student loans. Like, one of the things that's so exciting about that is you have not just the technical part or the sort of narrative arc or whatever, but you have all of those other pieces that you can discuss and talk about, all the choices that you made and the reasons you made those choices. And like, that's the kind of thing that it's sort of ephemeral when you're a student. I think you don't always think that way, but it becomes part of when you work professionally. Like, that's every day is like that. Like, that's such a significant part of the vernacular and the language that gets developed around the type of work that you're doing. So on Kong, like, what was your I'm so curious, like, your career arc, because you eventually, now you work as a visual effects supervisor. I'm wondering how you get, like, how you sort of move through the roles within the organization.
I think Kong, I was a CG supervisor. Might have been on a Yeah, I think that might have been the first show. I'm trying to think, because of all that, the New York development. So I was CG supervisor on that, and then I became a visual effects supervisor. The first show was Water Horse, which was a like a kid's film, really nice film that we
I've
did.
seen
So
it.
that was my first one.
Great, great, great work, Chris.
yeah, it was fun, a little piece though. And then it was, yeah, that was, and then I got into that role, and then it's just been continuing on ever since. Different shows with The Hobbit and Avatar, and then going on with some of the Netflix work recently, and working on Avatar, sequels now, and so it's all,
I wonder if you
different.
could you talk a little bit about, like, from your perspective, how moving into those, going from sort of intern to like helping with some of the tools and assistant TD, eventually arriving at CG supervisor and then moving into visual effects supervision, like, how for you, like, what were some of the skills, like, or muscles that you needed to build to be able to do some of those? Were there some growing pains along the way?
Yeah, I mean, I think there was I mean, you're always working to improve your eye, to try and get better at seeing that. But I think as you move up, then you deal more with, teams. Your teams get bigger and bigger. You're overseeing more and more people. So your skills have to improve with client interaction. Of course, that's a big part of it. Managing your day is a surprising part of it. As you get busy, you're like, how to, keep efficient and having other people dependent on your feedback and just managing your day. But then also it's problem solving. And I think the biggest thing that I learned over the years is really taking advantage of having such, knowledge within your crew, like how to actually get out of their way at times and take advantage of this like wealth of all these amazing artists in the room, because somebody in the room has a good solution to that problem, whatever's on the screen. So it's like, how can you create an environment so that people feel like they can contribute to it and help solve this problem that we're all trying to solve, So it's that type of thing.
What about
That's that.
the onset skills too? Like, I'm curious, was that something that was like, did you have some of that background already?
No, I didn't. And that's something I'm still learning on. Like, I'm still growing on that because I've had onset, like my onset tends to be off and on because I tend to go there, help with shooting, but also trying to build everything up to be ready when it comes back. So most of the shows that I've done, I've gone, there'll be an on-set supervisor. I'll go there for a bit, come back, build everything, go back and forth, and it's kind of this back and forth thing. So that's something I'm still even continuing to grow on, but it's but I've been doing more and more of that recently, which is good. And on-set's always a it's always its own can of worms as well.
Yeah, have you found, is there any real difference for you working, because you've been doing obviously features, but you've also been working now in episodic and television. Do you see any significant differences in the nature of how that work manifests?
It's still new to me, the episodic. I mean, it's been a couple of years. It's the speed, which is one thing. I mean, it's very quick decisions. And then, as you know, the quality of the episodic is amazing,
Yeah.
it's
It
it
rival it rivals feature
it
work. It's the
it does.
same in a lot of ways.
So we have to it's so the thing that we've been working on recently is, and that was that talk we were discussing earlier about, at SIGGRAPH, was how to maintain that, feature quality episodically, and what we've been doing, new ways that we've been working to try and maintain that. And it's the one of the things that has come out the most was using old practical techniques to problem solve without being in front of the computer. And what I mean by that, it's like a lot of stuff we were doing on Umbrella Academy was we were getting back into the workshop and doing little tests with, effects blood and building little props and doing, physical tests of water and things within physical things so that we could save time on the computer and work out those problems physically with the client and with ourselves.
Would you ever implement any of those sort of physical, kind of more traditional style effects, like on camera, or were they more for R&D purposes?
Some were for R&D, but sometimes if you got a good element out of it, you would put it in the put it in there.
Yeah, if
But
it works.
if it works, but there's still a lot of value, and I think students may not realize that as much, because I was showing some of our Umbrella Academy 2 work to students last couple weeks ago, and they're like, "Oh, we didn't realize you guys still did some physical stuff." And it's like we built physical props, and the actors wore things on set even if they were going to be replaced with CG, and that there is still a lot you can learn from the physical
Yeah,
work.
learning just like learning to see. There was a great talk that we had a like Beth Sassine. Do you remember her from Iowa? Yeah, she's
Remember
at Pixar now, and she reached out actually because she heard about me teaching at VCU
that.
and like did a little research into VCU and thought, oh, this is a cool like public school, you know, like we should reach out. And so she reached out, and they had Burt Barry, who's one of the senior art directors there, and he gave a great talk where he showed for what was the Inside Out movie where they were coming up with the look for what it's like in the inside world, and they actually would go, and the whole crew like would go, and they would build things out of like wax paper and then light it from behind and like photograph it and really kind of play in a physical sense, in a way to kind of wrap their head around some of the kinds of aesthetics, looks, and sort of material properties and ways in which things might behave, you know, in building it in the computer. And I thought that that was so, it was so exciting, I think, for students to see that and see like, you know, all the things that you can do physically can inform everything that you do digitally in terms of design and execution and yeah. Just knowing how something works.
And it's one word that you put in there too about play, and play and creativity. And there's a I like this. I point some of my students to this talk from John Cleese about creativity. And the jokes are kind of dated, but he really goes into how it's a mode of being and mode of working. And because sometimes students get so fixated on the idea of talent, but there's also a lot of it that has to do with getting into a certain state of play and creativity. And I encourage people to watch it. I was at Weta, and I was spending a lot of time with some of the art directors who do those amazing drawings for The Hobbit. And I noticed, I spoke to one of them, I said, "We got a lot of pillows around your desk and stuff. What's with that?" And he said, "Well, you have to really be in a relaxed state if you want to be creative, And I'd go by and see him, and he would just be very relaxed and coming up with these amazing drawings. But it goes back on that idea of, there's certain states that it's good to be in to really be creative,
Yeah, I think play, like, and or being really in a relaxed state, like those kinds of things, like allow you to have a certain kind of freedom for discovery, for happy accidents, for a kind of like you're just more open, I think, when you're in that space to be able to be receptive to things that can really change and alter your work. I always loved how I talked about this with a couple people too, and Kim, I think, maybe said this, and I always thought that was why I loved working with Kim Bromley. Was just she liked to have. She took the work seriously, but she never took herself seriously, right? It was like if you're making movies, and it can be really hard. There are days where it sucks and it's really stressful and it's really hard and the pressure is like on. But if you're not having fun most of the time, you might be doing it wrong.
Well, it's like, I mean, it's funny because you keep hitting on those key words like being open and that's the state you have to be in. And that whole research that he was talking about, his thing in his piece, the John Cleese piece, was Berkeley research, where they're talking about there's closed states, which is when you're need to get stuff done, which is important. And then there's open states where you're playful and you're creative, and you can't always be in a closed state. And sometimes in our industry, we're always trying to get things done, but you have to try and resist against that to be open and creative.
Yeah, find a way to strike a good balance. Like it's, I think it probably ebbs and flows too for people in different stages in life and different, like, if you got a good team around you too, it probably helps a lot.
It really
So
does.
now, have you had any opportunities to play around with some of the real-time rendering virtual production type of tools?
No, not as much yet. I'm starting to get into it now. Like, I was even doing my own kind of personal work of, stage assisting tools or AR tools, but it is a space that I would love to get into because I think there's so much, possibility there. But
Yeah, and so
it's
many like introduction of so many really interesting procedural tools too for doing some really interesting procedural work in real time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
Like
quote unquote.
and for art direction, like I have done a little bit recently, and I have been even speaking to some schools who are starting to, build up their virtual, production learning. So we're
Yeah,
kind
we'll
of all.
see. Like, if the promise is as good as the, as they say. Like, I mean, you see some great examples, but I saw an interesting conversation with, I was just chatting with, I'm losing my mind now. A former ILM colleague. I was chatting online, and he was lamenting about like, well, there's some things that like, if you watch these virtual production shows, like, anytime they decide to have a conversation, they have to stop and talk. They're not like walking and talking, or there's certain limitations. He was talking, Danielle, it was Danielle Jeanette, and he was talking about it. And I thought, oh, that's really interesting. He was starting to like say, all right, well, here's what I don't see happening in virtual production. I thought, well, that's interesting. Like it has its place and it has its benefits, but it's also still so new too, it seems.
It is. And I think that's part of it. And I think there's probably things that, that we haven't even found that it could help with as well. And it's, I mean, the one thing I think that could be interesting is how it could possibly open things up for more independent filmmakers who don't have big budgets. If they want to have a scene that looks like they're sitting in Paris or something, if they've got an LED wall that they can get access to, like what could expand to other developing countries and industries that are getting into this space.
Yeah, and if the price of the setup comes down, I still keep thinking too, even for if a university could acquire, systems like that for students to have the opportunity to build virtual worlds, virtual environments, virtual sets, and to be able to utilize those in, a cinema program or in a computer graphics program or something of that ilk, I think that would be really pretty amazing, as opposed to like building all these flats and like lighting a set and stuff. You'd have sort of something that was a hybrid version. So what's can you tell us anything about what you're doing right now? Like what's up with Chris right at this present moment here?
I wonder how much I can speak about. Yes, I'm doing I've, like the last recent thing was working with some of the Netflix things, like I said, with the Umbrella Academy projects. I've been doing work on the next Avatar series. A lot of
Oh, right. I forgot, you know, that's so funny. I forgot that was even happening.
yeah, a lot of, and it's a lot of development related work, which kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier, which has been great because it's been really pushing my brain into other areas and learning a lot more about.
Awesome.
Yeah, so that's been keeping me
How many are
busy.
they making? Can you say? Is it 3 or 4? Or are you not allowed to say?
Sure, yeah. I'm not even sure what
Okay.
the whole plan is. I'm just focusing on this current one.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, on the side, I've been doing some of the mentoring, some of working with different universities,
That's
and I
so
want
awesome that
to,
you're doing that. I just think that's the
yeah.
coolest.
Yeah. So I want to keep doing that. I want to keep doing more of that. So that's taking a, over the last couple months, that's been taking a bit of my time in a good way.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, cool, man. Well, we got to get you to come and give a talk at VCU at some point. That would be awesome because you'd be back in your old stomping ground, sort of.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not that far away.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's only on the other side of the planet.
I mean, no, but I mean, when I go back to visit my mom
Oh, right.
in Dale City, it's not
I
that
see what
far
you
away.
mean. Yeah.
But I can definitely, yeah, once that happens and the borders open up and stuff, then it'd be
Yeah,
great to come
hopefully.
back and see you
Hopefully
guys.
that's going to happen soon.
Yeah.
Well, Chris White, I cannot thank you enough for taking time to come on and chat with me. It's so great to see you.
Yeah.
You look fabulous. And
Thanks.
it's really great to hear your whole story. I know that I know the students will totally dig it. So thanks so much for all your time.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. It was fun. It just flew by. It's easy to just talk about all this stuff, but that's been
Yeah,
great.
and next time we get together, man, we got to go and have a beer or something.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, Chris, thanks a lot.